Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Explorminate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Explorminate podcast. I'm your host, Battle Mode, and this week I've got Drexy.
Hey, Ben. How's it going?
It's going pretty good, Drexy. I'm excited about tonight's podcast. We've also got Daz Tactic.
Welcome, guys. And thanks for having me on again. I love being on these.
You started to become a permanent feature of the podcast, aren't you, Daz?
Yeah, I just realized I just welcomed you, and I'm not even the host.
And most exciting of all, no offense to you other guys, but we've got Vic from VR Designs.
Hi, everybody. Nice to be back.
It's nice to have you, Vic. How have you been?
Busy. I'm almost having a family extension in the sense of having an extra daughter. And I'm moving house at the same time and still trying to work on multiple games at the same time. But otherwise, quite good. Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations, Vic. That's great news.
Yeah, congratulations, man.
Yeah, hopefully still a few days to go.
So we're gonna talk about Shadow Empire. This is a favorite topic amongst the three of us, the four of us, I guess, at the moment. And, you know, Shadow Empire has been one of my favorite games ever since I first played it. I haven't played it a whole lot in the last sort of 6 months or so because I've just had loads of other stuff going on. But I have been keeping my eye very, very closely on the patch notes and religiously installing each beta update on the Matrix version. And every time there's a new version, I play it just for like an hour just to try to get my head around some of the new stuff. But to say that the game has changed, you know, quite dramatically in the last year is an understatement, I think. What do you think, Daz? You've been playing it more thoroughly than me. Would you say that Shadow Empire has dramatically changed?
Yes, in many, many different ways too. Like I think that the biggest change when you're actually playing it is the AI is so much more difficult to compete against now. I mean, it was always a bit of a hard game, but the AI now seems to really think things through, which is really amazing to sort of play. I'm you get smashed by the AI if you don't if you're not careful. Also, the new Colossal Worlds, I'm really excited about where that's going to head as well.
Yeah, so I started playing a game over the weekend so that I could catch up with, you know, some of the new stuff that's been added, and there's been a whole bunch of new features. But the big thing that hit me right within the first few turns of the game is just how much more difficult it is. Now, I used to play Shadow Empire on the highest difficulty setting. I forget what it's called now, but the most difficult setting. And I found that on certain map types, it was incredibly challenging. On others, I was still winning fairly comfortably. But boy, I was playing on just regular or normal or whatever it is. And the miners wrecked me. I got completely blindsided. So the AI is so different now.
Yeah, for me, there's things like the new blueprint feature is really great. I love that. It's just, I'll say I'm quite a new player. I've probably been playing maybe a year at the most, so I finally got converted by Ben. So that blueprint feature was wonderful. New portraits as well, actually. It's, even though it doesn't really affect the gameplay, it just I don't know, it just feels a lot more better. And also, Vic seems to be experimenting with the logistics, and I want to quiz him on that later on in the podcast.
Actually, one other little thing, or not even just a little thing, actually, but also the different types of inhabitants on the world as well, I think, is just all these little things that are fleshing out the game, really making it really, really interesting to actually play. I mean, we're sort of talking about how much more difficult it is to play, and I guess we don't want to scare people away from this incredible game. It's just that the AI is playing more like a human, I guess. Like, they're sort of building units which actually make sense, whereas, you know, back in the early days, often there'd be a glut of a different type of unit that would sort of come into it. But, yeah, the blueprint mode as well, the portraits, even the portraits for the new different types of mutants and things that are coming, it's just an incredible addition. The game just gets better and better and better.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, also, I want to say on the difficulty, actually, Vic has done a really good job of actually the creation of the planets and the options you have. It doesn't have to be super difficult if you just scale things back. I think a lot of games could actually learn from this, because it gives you there's so many different planet types, the size of the planets, the difficulty settings. There's just so much you can do to tailor the game to play how you want. If you want a chill game, that's possible. If you want a really crazy, frantic game, that's also possible. It's just, you've got so many options of how you can set up your game and also regenerate the map to sort of fit to how you want it. So, yeah, there's been a lot of crazy stuff going with the AI. It doesn't have to be super hard the way Daz plays it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So I was thrilled with that feature, because I've been playing for quite a long time and I felt that I'd really been getting on top of it. But Vic, I'm going to ask you a question, right? It strikes me that a lot of the changes that you were making in the game with regards to more nuanced economy, you know, things like making water a little bit more difficult to get hold of, but yet still giving the players kind of more tools within which to, you know, to kind of play with the economy and get their early game economy going. It all felt to me a little bit like these features weren't just adding them for flavor. They felt like a natural, organic way of increasing the difficulty for people who wanted it to be more difficult. Is that a fair assessment of what you were trying to do with the new features?
I think partly. For one part, it's just there's been stuff like, for example, with the water, with the salinity levels, and the pH levels and stuff. I just also liked to flesh out the planets a little bit more. I really loved the planet generation part of my engine. And if I can improve upon it, if I can find the time to do it, I like to do it. And it's true. At the same time, I wanted some planet types to be like much harder, because I remember at the beginning when I started with Shadow Empire, I think I just had like something like the Cess class, like the June-like planet. And over time, you know, the other ones were added during development and even after. And especially with Oceania, where you have like really lush planets with plenty of rainfall and often good conditions for agriculture. I don't know, I felt like, you know, the original planets should actually be much harder than those planets. And on one hand, and on the other hand, it got a bit boring for some players as well. It was always easy on planets with oceans. So that's why I added these systems, for example, for water, to actually make, on the one hand, like the really hard planets even harder, and have some variety on the good planets, where sometimes, yeah, there's a big ocean, but you know, the water quality is really low. So it's not going to be as easy as you thought it was to get that water.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I kind of guess that was the idea, part of the idea with what you were doing, because I often see, you know, kind of people talking about Shadow Empire in the various, you know, various areas of the Shadow Empire community, like on Discord or whether it was on the Matrix forums, and often, or in the comments on my videos, and often you'd see people saying, oh, you know, this or that is kind of overpowered, like tanks are too strong or this is too strong. And the first question I always say when I hear about balance complaints is, what map, are, you know, what planet type are you playing on? And invariably you'd find that they were always either playing on just Siwa or on, you know, like just kind of one type of planet. And, you know, so when you kind of get people to play those other planet types, so they're coming back and going, oh yeah, I see what you mean now. I increased the mountains to 20% and now tanks suck. So I think it's just a sign of a really versatile game where, you know, you put in these so many different options for planet generation that the game dramatically changes. I mean, it's still the same fundamental core game mechanics. But, you know, a game on like a Seth planet with like 25% mountains is going to play very, very differently to a Siwa class planet where you've got tons of, you know, you've got loads of infrastructure or previous infrastructure with the ruins and that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think it's endlessly replayable in that respect because the game just changes so much depending on the planet generation.
Right. And it is possible to get to roll really hard planets, you know, at the moment. If you would have a desert planet with like almost no water deposits on the ground and like trace water in the atmosphere, you would actually have to use the wind traps and stuff. Everything has been really balanced, including the wind traps, by the way. So, yeah, I'm quite happy. It was a huge list of changes that came with that patch we are referring to right now. And it went relatively smoothly. I think there's still a few things I would like to give a second look, notably ammunitions, because I feel there's been some criticism that there's been straining the logistics system too much. And I think I already reduced the weight of ammunitions when they're transferred with strategic transfers. But I think I should still spend some time on that to see if I can fine-tune that a little bit more. It did what I wanted it to do. It's basically what I wanted it to do. I think the easiest metaphor would be like, I guess, Ukraine, where it's nice to have a lot of equipment, but you need to have the ammunition to keep using it if you're in a protracted war. It did that very well. And it actually makes people now, you know, gives incentive to build more infantry, for example, instead of just the most powerful guns and artillery and tanks, because you will need to support them if you keep using them over a protected period of time. If somebody can pronounce that last word for me properly, that would be nice.
Yeah, so and with the different planet types and things like that you've put in there, Vic, with the new Colossal class of planets, is that really designed to make the Oceania sort of much more spread out, or is it? Was there any sort of thought process? What's the thought process behind having such massive planets? Because that's going to it's going to be fun. Like, I love the logistics in the system, so that sort of planet's going to be great for trying to extend your logistics. But I also had a lot of fun actually playing where it was like Oceania worlds, where you had just tiny little islands spread across this massive, massive planet. What's your thought process behind the Colossal planets?
Well, it's not a huge thought process. It's actually quite small. I thought like, yeah, why don't I open it up, the larger planets? I mean, I didn't before because I thought like, I really don't advise to play them because they're just too big, basically, for me to have fun on. I mean, it becomes a huge undertaking to play and conquer a planet that size. But I thought like, well, maybe there's some people who beg to differ and have a different, you know, game style that they prefer. And I thought I also want to see, you know, just I liked, you know, the planet generation algorithm is actually capable to generate a bigger planet. And maybe for myself, it was just to see the bigger maps. I think they're quite pretty and interesting because they're so big. There's a lot of detail in them. But there's not a huge thought process behind it. It's just basically an experiment. I'm not 100% sure they're actually like really playable. I mean, there shouldn't be any bugs or anything, but I mean, I put a warning label on them. The warning label says slow, which basically means this game will last like a really long time. And the AI will need more time to think because the map is bigger and there will be more units, and et cetera. That's basically it. Like, maybe I was wrong, because just because I don't want to undertake such a huge world doesn't mean everybody else doesn't want it either.
I love having the option, actually. I think I really like having it there. Even though you may not play it much, it's just nice to have it. As you say, it sort of it fleshes out the whole thought process behind the planet. So I think it's a very, very welcome addition.
Yeah, and it will also allow me, you know, in time to experiment with a bit more rules, maybe for high gravity planets, because it was very hard to generate a high gravity planet before because they were all sort of like slightly smaller or at best Earth-sized. And with these Colossus class planets, you can get really like gravities like up to 4 or 5, which is still sort of livable, especially if, you know, it has been multiple generations who have been having children there. It's not completely out of the realm of possibility to live on a 4G world for a human. And I thought like if at least I get like the sandbox set up, and then we can see if I can get some extra rules in place for what that would mean for combat, for the economy, etc. So it's basically just I'm doing this a lot lately. I'm going one step at a time. So I expand a little bit, and then I can expand on what I just added, and so we go step by step forward. And if anything goes wrong, if there's feedback, you know, that shows problems, I can sort of deaccelerate and fix that stuff first.
So I'm always impressed, Rick, because you have this kind of attitude about the game where, as long as it's fun for you to be kind of developing and making, you're going to be keeping doing it, right? That's, you know, obviously it's got to be financially viable and people want to play it. But so to hear you say, you know, oh, well, you know, I kind of just wanted to make a big planet and just see how it works. It's really, really cool. And also, you know, the kind of design idea, I mean, I guess as a developer, there's really nothing to stop you from slapping a history lesson on the existing planet saying, this is going to have like four times gravity. But you don't do that. You're setting yourself some kind of rules there. You know, you're like, okay, I'm not going to make these really high gravity planets because that's not how the game generates them. So if I want a high gravity planet, it's got to be really big. So I think that is really cool. And just quickly as well, just from speaking to the community for years, there is always a few people who want to play the biggest maps. And they will try. Like that game that I played on YouTube that I did actually finish, the one on the Seth planet, that one, that was like 60, I think I counted 60 or 70 hours of gameplay, of recorded gameplay. So I'm going to add another 15, 20 hours on top of that because there was a lot of time spent off camera. So that was a long, long game. And that was just on one of the, you know, your old large maps. And it had the survival stress history lesson. So there were many, many many majors in the game. It was incredibly good fun. And I finished it as well. But I can't imagine playing that big, big map. I want to. I really want to. But I'm also trying to minimize the amount of series that I start that I don't finish.
Yeah, maybe don't pick that one for a stream.
Actually, if I can just bounce in, I do have another question, actually, because I get asked a lot whenever I live stream the game, there's a few things that do come up. And with planet generation, a lot of people actually say, will you ever add in a situation where you've got sliders, where you can actually pre-designate like the mountains, the water, the different other parameters where you can come in, and rather than actually having it randomly generate in the different areas, will you ever sort of open it up so that you allow the player to be able to preset the settings for the planets?
I don't know. It's not on my immediate agenda for this year. The thing is, it's quite complicated to actually do that. You know, maybe at some point I will see the light, you know. There was another request that came from you as well, like, you know, like the ability to rename leaders. I've resisted that one for like years. For, I guess, for aesthetic reasons. And I think, you know, aesthetic reasons is sort of the same thing why I'm a bit reluctant to add these sliders. I really like the part where you roll a planet as if you're rolling a character in a role-playing game. And, you know, if you roll a character in a role-playing game, in most role-playing systems that I have used to play, you cannot say in advance, and I want this character to be like really strong or blah blah blah. It's sort of the rolling is should be sort of part of the fun. However, I do note that not everybody is having fun rolling planets when they're looking for something very specific, because it becomes really tedious. And once you did the correct roll, you're clicking so fast that you click it away and then you have to continue and etc. So I do hear you, but it's not planned now.
Yeah, for me, I don't mind the rolling. It's just with the different questions that people do ask. That's a very, very common one that does come up from viewers.
Yeah, I'm on Team Vic there. I think that the game, it differs from other Space 4 or from other 4X games in that it has this unique planet generation system. So I wouldn't, you know, while I think it would be nice for people who want that, I probably wouldn't use it so much unless I was, I guess, trying to get a very specific gameplay style. But I mean, the reroll system's pretty good, right? So like if I want a planet with 25 or 30% mountains, which I've started liking playing on actually, because I love the Air Force stuff and infantry, I can do that usually within a couple of rerolls. So, you know, especially if once you've got a bit of experience with how the planet generator works and what you need to be getting with, you know, in order to get the results that you want, it doesn't usually take that long. So I think that, you know, I'm on Team Vic there. I think it's nice to have the randomized thing. So yeah.
The thing is, it's not only aesthetic, it's just like the whole way the thing is set up, that there's multiple steps. And for example, if there are forests at all, it depends on a lot of other variables that are sort of determined in earlier stages. And in order to ensure things, you know, it sort of goes against the grain of the generation algorithm, which goes to a whole chain of different steps. Probably if I would have to do it, I would maybe probably just circumvert the whole thing and do it the other way around. But that would be a lot of work. So that's the other reason why I'm not doing it. If it would just be a question of a UI question where I could add some sliders, I would probably have done it.
Vic, just quickly, when you add something like one of the history classes, like, you know, spread out or something, does that take you a significant amount of work then to tweak the planet generation algorithm to do that?
I guess it depends, but maybe I should add some others because it's relatively easy to do.
See, that might be one way of doing it. I mean, I think if you have more history classes that kind of nudge the planet generation in a certain way, that might be a way that's kind of still fitting with your randomized, you know, with the way that the algorithm works and, you know, this kind of cool you roll what you get kind of thing without, but still pleasing people who want to kind of have, you know, more rivers or whatever it is that they're hoping to get on the planet.
Yeah. It's just with some like the ecosystem, it's complicated because I would have to really do a lot of pushing just for example for forest, you know, like, yeah. I think I could do some brute force stuff, like, you know, if the type of trees that evolved on the planet in, you know, the first pass of the algorithm, actually, you know, they don't grow everywhere because there's only a limited habitation zone where the temperature is correct. Maybe I could, you know, add some, if this special history class is flagged, I add a special gene to these plants, which makes them like super resistant to weird temperatures and force, you know, to have more percentage of forest on the planet or stuff like that. But it's just considering all the other requests and stuff I still have on my own wish list, it's just not very high on my priority list.
Wait, can I ask you just a quick question? If you could either like go back to when you first made Shadow Empire or possibly Shadow Empire 2, what sort of feature or would you have in the game that's in now that you hope you wish you started with?
I got a really bad memory, to be honest.
No worries.
No, I don't remember. You mean like that at the moment, like, during development, like more recently, or I felt like, oh my god, if I only had that done from the beginning.
There's no feature off the top of your head you could think of. Oh, I wish I did this. No,
there's some stuff I would have designed differently, you know, if I would start from zero again, for sure. A lot of stuff, basically. I think one of the but that's not in there. It's all stuff that's not in the game right now. But if I would restart from zero, I would probably put it in. Stuff like that exists, yeah. But there's nothing where, not much where I felt like, maybe the logistics system, you know, in retrospect, I would say like, I could have made that one a bit more smooth. Maybe I should have picked a different system that was a bit easier on less hardcore players.
Yeah, can I actually ask you that? Because this was one of things I really struggled with when I first started playing was the logistics system. I've got a lot better at it now, and I've noticed you've sort of added a few different types of logistics systems that you seem to be testing. Can you just go through why have you added these, and do you think the logistics system is overcomplicated for new players?
I think there's a category of players that doesn't find it fun to learn how to use the current systems. So basically there's two flags you can toggle at the moment. There's a flag that just gives you more logistical points and range. It sort of doubles it. And otherwise the systems stay the same. Honestly, compared to the beginning of Shadow Empire, the addition of the pool point system already makes it possible to play for a really long time without actually understanding how it really works. And I'm testing like a mid-core logistics option, which is basically meant to be less hardcore. And what that one does is it, you know, because what's difficult for most people to wrap their heads around is that sort of the logistical points, they have to be guided over specific roads. And this guiding process can either be done automatically by pool points, or by using traffic lights. And often there, you know, they don't manage to wrap their head around it. So the idea of the mid-core option is logistical points. They don't really branch in different directions of a road. They're just everywhere that's in reach. And the moment you actually use them, they disappear everywhere, which gameplay-wise, not gameplay-wise, like effect-wise, it doesn't change anything. It does it the other way around. And it would also be a system that would be more comprehensible for the day I can teach the AI to actually use logistics, which has been a long-standing request of quite a vocal minority. But I didn't have that much feedback on the mid-core logistics yet, I have to say. So, and actually teaching the AI to use that one is quite a big
one. One thing I find with the logistics is that it has become more intuitive over time. Like, it's certainly easier than what it was at the start. And also, I think the people who really struggle with it are the ones who want to take it right to the edge before they then start to improve it. And I think if people just have a bit of a rule of thumb of just basically having double what they need, it doesn't really get in the way of, like, it doesn't, like, I'm noticing I'm not really stopping to think about the logistics much until I get sort of, you know, fairway into the game. And I like that. Like, I like the logistics system anyway, to be honest. I think it's a great system. As you say, with the pull points, that really does improve it. And the traffic lights, once you get used to using those as well, it's not difficult or onerous to make use of that. But the one thing I do get with comments again from other viewers is that they essentially just wait and wait and wait until everything's turned to black. I wonder if there's rather than actually changing the system, I wonder if there's a way that there's like a notice could come up for the player when their logistics system is starting to get under strain. That may be helpful so that they know to start to invest in logistics.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite an experienced Shadow Empire player, I think, and While I love the logistics system, I don't use the mid-core. I don't use the easier systems. I love it because I think it's so engaging. And, you know, wars are won and lost on logistics. And Shadow Empire is one of the only games that really models that very well, in my opinion. There are some other war games that have very good logistics systems. Shadow Empire is the best for me. However, I don't agree with you, Daz, that it's easier now than it was when it first started. I think while the pull system is good, the way that it interacts with the traffic light system, I still find it so confusing. And, you know, like, you're really kind of supposed to be able to play with the pull system without using the traffic lights. Yeah, I can't get that effect. Like, I have to use the traffic lights as well. So either I'm just not understanding how those two systems interact well, or I'm pretty good at the logistics now. Like, my attitude with logistics in Shadow Empire is, make sure you plan for logistics and you do that first. Because if you leave it till everything's bottlenecked, you're going to lose. you're going to have starvation. But I think that with three systems in there now, it's my one kind of gripe about the game, really, is that I feel that it's too complex now for new players, because you've got not just one system that you've got to learn. Now you've got three.
Well, actually, if I can just interrupt there and maybe just make one little suggestion for that aspect, and that is to, with the traffic light system, is to have the pull points by default not apply to the traffic system, and you have to actually turn them on rather than off. That would then make it much, much more intuitive.
It definitely works like that, definitely, yeah. I still run into issues, but I've got to say that the big issues that I used to have with it, I haven't seen, and I think some of them probably were bug-based, and the other ones is just Vic has just taken the time to very kindly explain to me how it works, because I couldn't get it at first.
I have actually had a small problem with the pull system where I've set it to pull and then like set it to 100% block. By some reason, I'm getting stuff being pulled where I can't figure out why it's being pulled. I don't know whether it's because I've got too much high truck stations. It's just allowing a lot through. But I don't know. It's just rather... that has sort of stumped me. And I don't know whether it's fixed in the newer patch, because this is actually in a multiplayer game. I've had it where there wasn't a bunch of troops or infrastructure. There might have been like one mine. And yeah, there was like 1,000 points going through to it. And I couldn't work it out.
I would have to see the actual save file to help you. But I think it proves the point that it's definitely not the easiest part of the game, right? So to come back to the original question, like, what would you have done differently? Well, I probably would have designed the logistics system a bit differently. I'm still trying now to, with the mid-core logistics version, that would basically supersede all the other two systems if you choose to use that version. And the mid-core version would basically be much easier to wrap your head around, because it would just go everywhere, the logistical points. And once they get used, they disappear everywhere as well. So that would, in my opinion, would, I don't know if anybody of you actually tried to use the mid-core logistics option.
I've only tried the Ultimaic. I didn't try the mid-core one.
Right.
I like it. I like it hard, actually. So I would never turn that on. I do like the hard system.
I'm the same. Now that I've kind of got my head around it and I'm better with it, I actually like the original. I like the original system best mixed with the pool system. I think it's just so engaging and fun. Like, I really, really enjoy that part of the game. So I probably wouldn't really choose the mid-core unless, and maybe if I was playing a multiplayer game, because the one time that it really did bite me in the ass was during a multiplayer game. But I think that was my misunderstanding of how it worked more than anything.
All right.
Okay, so I'd like to talk about the roadmap a little bit, Vic. How far into your updated roadmap? Because about a month ago, you updated your long-term plan because of your incoming family, increasing the size of your family, let's say. You've kind of like readjusted some of the long-term sketch that you came out with for Shadow Empire's development. And I'm just going to make this clear, by the way, this as a disclaimer. Vic's always been really, really careful to say this is a plan. It's not like a promise. Okay, it's not a dedicated roadmap that he's going to stick to. It is a rough idea of where he's going with the game. What are you working on now, Vic? And what's in your mind with Shadow Empire as you work?
But basically, it's two things. I got a list of like small stuff I want to fix or improve upon. It's basically like stuff requested by the community, and I'm working on the advanced politics feature, which in the previous plan, would be a DLC all by itself, including some other features. And I sort of pulled that plan apart and said, like, let's pause DLCs for the moment. Never say never, but let's just go one big feature at a time to make it actually easier for me to progress and to release new content more often, especially with my personal life. This year is going to be a bit tight on time, so I felt like it's better to release a really good feature or two like this year instead of like saying like, well, there's absolutely nothing, and maybe summer 2025 a new DLC will be finished. So to come back to the question, I already answered at the beginning, but I'm working on the advanced politics feature at the moment.
Are you allowed to talk about any of that stuff yet?
Yeah, sure. There's no. The game has already been released. It's a long time. Everything is on my plan already. It's posted on the internet. So I think the advanced politics one was the little block in the top of the list anyway. So
actually, Vic, you've got that down as Republica in version 1.3. Is that going to be a DLC, or is that going to actually just be an update?
Well, you just answered this.
Exactly. I did. But the idea here is to do no DLC for some time here and just release new features like one at a time, instead of saving up like multiple features and then packaging them and then doing a DLC, because I feel it would take too much time to do that. And it would not be good for you guys, for the players, for the community to have development breaks from their perspective that are too long.
Well, that's great to hear that you're so customer focused in that respect then, because it would be quite easy for you to go, right, I want to make some money, so I'm going to, people can wait. The thing is, I guess, is that when the game doesn't change that much over a course of, if it's going to be years, often you're going to get a big drop off with players. So I think it kind of makes sense in terms of the long-term development of the game to do that. I mean, that's very kind of you to do that, really. Because we've paid for a full game, and like, I know, Daz and I have disagreed on this, but I see Shadow Empire as a finished game, okay? Anything that you're adding now is just an extra, right? That's the way I see it. And I think that, to keep the game going for this long with free content after the original release is really, really good.
Well, as long as there's, a certain level of continued sales, I like to keep putting energy in this game. It's not the only project that I have on my desk, but I love the game. And honestly, the idea of, redoing a game like this, it's almost unthinkable, because because it would be so much work if you would start from scratch again to make a game that gets to the complexity and intricacy where we are today.
I play mostly multiplayer game. I'm currently in two games at the moment. So I'm always like a couple patches behind. And whenever I start a new multiplayer game, it's like I just get all these features thrown at me. It's like, wow. I'm surprised how much work you're actually still putting into this game after such time. And while I was disappointed that there wasn't a DLC, I'm just so happy that you're actually still patching. And I kind of want a DLC just so I can give you some money for all these updates you do.
it did cross my mind to say, okay, maybe I should do like a small DLC that's basically just, you know, a disguised request for a cup of coffee, you know, like a DLC that makes clear it's like it doesn't bring anything big, but hey, if you got like, I don't know, like a few bucks to spare, buy it anyway. Could be an option at some time, but you know, for the moment I'm good. I like to work on the game, and you know, eventually I would like to get it to like an official gold status at some point, which could be a point where maybe I could finally, you know, one thing I like to do is to get a printed manual for the game. That's one of the things I like to get it to gold, that we could make like a huge manual printed in book form. It's something I like to do. Maybe you revise all the graphics, give it a, like a final gloss over. But before that, I want some stuff to still be in there. And that includes especially politics and Navy, and finally getting a logistics system that's also playable by more mid-core players.
So Vic, on the topic of the politics system you're bringing in, I'm really curious, this advanced politics, what's going to be in there? Have you, how far are you into that? And can you let us know, like, how is that going to look in when that update drops?
Well, it's going to be a sizable system. We already discussed a little bit about it the previous podcast. I think I did all the design on paper, so I have to get to actually coding it now. Basically, it does a couple of things at the same time. I like to do it that way. There's many things I want to do, and if I can find something that does multiple things at the same time, that's great. So in no particular order, it would basically address snowballing, finally, in the sense that we'll have this attribute called virtus, which represents the intangible life force of a culture, the faith of your people in each other. Their virtue and their readiness to sacrifice themselves for the common good. And this, if this virtus is high, everything is okay. But the idea is that if things go good for you for too long a time, like the virtus goes down, and that will have consequences, especially for your military, in the sense that things are going good, people will start to become a bit decadent and maybe less eager to go to a trench to die because they have a good life at home, right? And at this point, like your recruitment levels would go down, you know, morale of the soldiers would be more sensitive to go down. There will be other types of issues. And that would basically act as sort of like a anti-snowball mechanism where if virtus goes down, your military is going to get into problems. And there the politics come in as well, where if you want to get the virtus up again, the best way to do it is to change your political system, to have either a voluntary change that re-excites the nation, or maybe a revolution against or with your consent, and or another option, which is to, we can go in there later, but there's also a third option to go in a different direction, politically speaking. Like, for example, like if you're playing a democracy, if virtus goes down, it sort of becomes a decadent democracy, and all the political leaders, they no longer really, you know, care about the common good. They just care about getting elected, and they will promise whatever, and they will put proposals for laws in place that just burden your empire or your democratic empire in this case. And at some point you could say like, okay, time to change the system. Let's have a military coup. Or you could say let's double down on democracy. And for example, in the case of democracy, you could embrace the the shining path of the syndics, where you actually say, like, let's go even further. We have to ensure equality for everybody. And we're going to install a syndic computer to help run things. And so there's always the option that you say, like, if you don't want to switch the system, you could go even deeper into the system to extreme levels.
Now, that sounds really cool. I'm going to ask a question of my buddy Daz here. Daz, how do you feel about that? Because I know that you're the sort of player that when you start snowballing, you kind of want the game to end. How are you feeling about the possibility of the game having this sort of balancing mechanism, you know, through gameplay mechanics that kind of draws the game out longer like that? What do you think?
I don't know. If it's going to draw the game out, then particularly if, you, as you say, when you are snowballing, you want to get it over and done with as fast as possible. And if it does do that, then yeah, I wouldn't like it. But I like what I'm hearing. Like it certainly sounds interesting, like they're having a decadence. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, is this going to be another complexity that's going to make it more difficult, more barriers for entry for players to get into the game? But it sounds like it's just going to be essentially through osmosis. And I'm guessing it may make the profiles more important, which is a good thing. So I think that there is certainly going to be, like, if the player has got the ability to push the direction into different areas and there's benefit in the profile system, I think that could be really quite cool and good. But yeah, it would concern me if it was there to hinder larger empires. That would be something that I would be a little bit concerned about. But that would be, it's not a major concern of mine.
Right, I want to move on to the Navy. Obviously, with Oceania, we had the maritime trading houses, and it was very contentious with the community. A lot of people were sort of expecting to be able to have naval units and stuff like that, and you do have naval units in your roadmap, which I'm a little bit worried about, and I kind of agreed the way you did Oceania, because I think you have to be really careful on letting players have full control of the sea and unbridled movement across the sea. I could see that being a lot of problems, especially in multiplayer games. What are your general ideas, and how did you feel about the reaction from people, or maybe misunderstanding of how Oceania was going to play?
I understand the complaints. I've tried to do my best to market it as, like, you know, this DLC brings ocean planets, and to really stress, I even insisted that they put on the product page, like, this DLC does not include Navy units. But still a lot of people were disappointed, and I hear them, and that's why it is on my to-do list. And I did arrive at the conclusion on how to do it. I just have to find the time to actually do it. And basically it's the thing, I want to do something else first, like that would be advanced politics, because I haven't worked on those systems for like a long, long time. I've been doing a lot of nitty-gritty with like the more military aspects of the game. I would like to flesh out the politics first, but after that, I should get to Navy. And I did, over the years, I think I finally fleshed out a system that I think will do the job, which would basically be a sort of like a WeGo system, where the players in their turns, they give the orders to their fleets. And then at the end or the beginning of the round, everything gets calculated. Battles are fought in seas, just like land battles. A report of it will be saved for inspection in the respective players' turns. There will be like holding boxes in sea zones, ports. And I also like to do like unique capital ships, where like each capital ship can have its own name and like probably even like like damage points. And last but not least, I would also like, once the players have like actual Navy units, to also have units for the MTH, for the trading houses, the maritime trading houses on the map, that could actually act also as aggressors, especially if they have a chance to stop the player developing a navy still.
That sounds really cool, actually. So would the and I know that one of the problems that you actually were trying to overcome with naval forces was the area that the navy like, it's not just a hex by hex type arrangement. Is like, with that system, if you have a WeGo type system, would they essentially be patrolling like large hex groups as they sort of move through the oceans, or would they be how have you sort of tackled that aspect?
Well, basically there's already sea zones, right? So basically they would function as sort of like a fleet is either in C-zone 1 or 2 or 3 or in a port. Now, every C-zone consists of many hexes. And probably like the algorithms, if, for example, multiple fleets of players that are at war with each other in the same C-zone, it will calculate where and which parts of their fleet would actually engage each other and on which hex. And there they would fight this battle. And depending on the hex, there might also be, for example, coastal artillery support or aircraft support from the land or from aircraft carriers.
Would that give the player the ability, though, to be able to, for example, choke points in certain like straits and things like that? Would the player end up being able to focus on specific areas, like even like besieging or, you know, sort of like essentially besieging a port? Or sort of, you know, trying to sort of control the supply going into a port. If it's only just by C zone by C zone, is that going to be enough for the player?
I would like to add some mechanisms to allow for some finer strategy. For example, I hope to add something where like the player will be able, for example, for a certain fleet to set a focus point on an actual hex. It's already necessary, by the way, to, you know, do amphibious invasions. You would have to check a specific hex where you want to actually execute this amphibious invasion. And the same with like choke points, for example. You could say like, yeah, this fleet is going to focus on the area around this hex, and so it will be harder for enemy ships to move through there. If the enemy ships would try to get through, there will be a battle, depending on other standing orders, right? Because it's Wego, I would have to provide for a lot of standing orders in the sense that you tell in advance how your fleet is going to react to certain conditions. Like, for example, you can tell your fleet not to engage if the enemy is, for example, much larger. Or you could tell your artillery to act as coastal artillery if enemy ships are near. Same for aircraft. And then it would basically, the game would sort of, you know, play without you, how the fleets actually move and what they do, and there will be battles. And it's actually a way to have a little bit of Wego in what's otherwise an I-go-you-go system.
That sounds incredibly good, actually, I've got to say. That really does sound amazing. It's sort of,
yep,
it's funny because different people got different ideas, but that really does seem to sort of, it fits everyone. Like, I think everyone would be happy with that sort of system.
I hope so as well, because I don't necessarily need loads and loads of more counters to push around in a game that's already got tons of counters. So the idea of it being done with C zones, but having, you know, being able to focus on strategic missions in certain areas, I love that idea, because that gives you some, you know, that gives the player agency in the Navy system. But it doesn't mean I've got to, you know, manually load, you know, troops onto ships and all that stuff in 4X that I never really enjoyed. So I think that sounds really, really good to me.
Yeah, the idea is like, for example, you know, the loading and unloading of units, that will not happen. You know, you will give your cargo fleet the order to establish a logistical line towards a certain beach or port, and that will create a logistical link, just like the MTH contracts do right now. And then you can just strategically transfer your troops over. There might be a damage percentage or something to that, you know, if this cargo fleet is being harassed, for example, by enemy submarines, then some of these ships might sink, right, or get damaged. So it would mean, for example, you would end up, if it's a harassed cargo fleet, then maybe you would end up with like 20% damage on this logistical connection, which would mean if you transfer troops over it, you would lose 20% of the troops. It's not perfect, you know, because you know in advance how many you're going to lose.
That kind of answers my question, because I was going to ask, how does Navy logistics then work and how can they be harassed? But you've kind of answered that, so yeah.
The only thing I don't like is that you know, this is something that doesn't happen in reality. You know, the troops are actually on the ships. You first establish the logistical link and then you send the troops over. So it's a bit of a compromise to keep the game playable and sort of consistent with the rest of its systems. We already did that for the air bridges as well. There, you know, you lose aircraft and then it puts a damage percentage on the actual link the logistical link. And then if you transfer troops through it, they lose about that percentage. And it's a bit gamey maybe, but honestly, if I would have to do it completely realistically, then yeah, you would have to load all your units on ships and then see what happens.
Vic, I just want to go to another part of the Republica 1.3 update that you're planning. And this is the section on advanced trade. I'm really interested in this. Like, it's saying here, so in your rough plan, it says more items to integrate with the luxury consumption rules. What does that look like, do you think? How are you planning on doing that?
I'm still quite vague on that, to be honest. But I have a few objectives on the horizon there. And one thing I would really like to see is that, like, every planet has something. For example, if a planet has like alien agriculture, that's possible, that there might be some actually named plants or seeds or fruits that could have some special value, and that they would be procedurally generated, so that every game has some unique items. Every game you play, there's something new. That's one of the things I would like to have. And the other thing I would like to have is the ability to maybe trade also equipment. But I still have to look into that a bit, how to actually make that function. But I think it could be nice to be able to sell, like, for example, your tanks to the traders, and another player might actually buy them up, or a miner.
I'd be actually interested in maybe having, like, it's got luxury goods here. Maybe it could be based on, like, your empire's profile. So if you're a very, you know, decadent empire, then maybe your citizens want a certain type of alcohol, or maybe another sort of profile. Maybe you just subdue your citizens with drugs and stuff like that. I think that could be quite interesting, actually.
Yeah, I just have to find a balance between what would be really cool to have and not going overboard completely either, scope-wise.
Vic, I've got a quick question just about the existing trade, you know, the trade system diplomacy. Do your AI opponents value it if you're trading with them? Like, will they take that into account when they make things like war declarations, if you've got a strong trading agreement with them already?
I think at the moment, the AI is really focused on, you know, there's two systems that target the AI. Like, it's the sort of like the role-playing part, where the political faction that's in power is taken into account, and like what their outlook is on life and war. And for example, like a militaristic AI, you know, he basically just doesn't care about anything except conquering the whole planet. While Republican AI would actually probably often be happy to stay at peace, keeps an eye on wanting to conquer the planet, but it would be less important for him. And on the other side, it makes, like, the AI makes an analysis of if it thinks it could actually win a war against you, taking everything into account that it's playing at the same time, like its other enemies, people who might invade it at the same time. And those are the two main factors that decide if the AI goes to war with you. And I think that the only effect of the trade pact, whatever which level it is that every time you make a pact, like, the relation level goes up. But it's not, the AI is not like taking into account, oh, I have already trade level 3, I'm not going to go to war. No. But that could be something to, you know, maybe look into it, advanced trading and stuff, if it actually has a big benefit in keeping trade up with you, could be a reason not to go to war.
Before you go, there is one thing that's intriguing me on this roadmap. I'm skipping over a bit, but right on the right top hand side, you've got Shadow Legion and Starfire. Are those DLC or those new games? What are they?
It's just a teaser, right? No, I got some plans there, but that's just a teaser. The idea is, like, after Gold, like, at some point, it's not impossible that at some distant point in the future, I would have to do something else. I would like to go to space at some point. So that's like Starfire. It sort of, it represents my desire to bring a game, this game or a game like this, to a multi-planet universe. And the Shadow Legion is like another thing that I would like to do is like to have more sense of more tactical battles, I guess, or less high scale, more close up and personal, where you can actually see an aggro dome on a hex, for example, instead of a 200 by 200 kilometer hex, where you would have a lower scale. So that's two working titles for other games that would continue like the Shadow universe after a gold version. But they're just daydreams, I guess, at the moment.
Yeah, because I was wondering, are you planning more games like this? Because you've got your normal war game series, which you've done, what is it, like three or four of them now? I guess Advanced Gold was kind of Shadow Empire. Are you interested in making more games like Shadow Empire in the future?
I guess I am. I do have those daydreams there. So, yeah, I guess it's really future. So even, you know, with my disclaimers about plans, I'm not going to go in details on them because it's really too far over the horizon to say anything yet. But I would like to, yeah.
Right, guys, I guess we should wrap up. Vic, thank you so much for coming and taking some time to talk to us about Shadow Empire again, because, you know, it's always good to catch up with you and have a bit of a chat and just kind of see where it is that you're going with the game.
Well, it's my pleasure. You can always give me a call, but wait, maybe about 6 weeks. Please.
And thanks, Drexy and Daz Tactic, for coming and joining us today.
Oh, thanks again. Look, I always enjoy doing these, and it's always great to hear Vic's plans. It's sort of, I feel really, really comfortable with that, with what you're talking about with the Navy, to be honest. That really does sound like it's a great, great solution. I know that it was something that you were sort of trying to think through at one point, trying to find the best system. And this, it really does sound like a best of all worlds type system to me.
Is your mind at ease now, Daz? Because I know that you've been worried about this.
Yeah, because I'm one of the people who was really thinking that the Oceania world should have come with some sort of naval forces that you controlled. And that for me really does sound amazingly good. To be able to have, to be able to doing it in that sort of WeGo type system where it's not onerous, but you still, as you said before, you've got agency over what you do, you've got focal points, things like that. I think that really does sound incredibly good for when that one does come.
Yeah, I'm pumped for that as well. Like I could have taken a leave in the Navy stuff originally, but now I've heard about the plans for it, I'm like, actually, that sounds really, really cool. Definitely fits into the simulation kind of vibe of Shadow Empire, but giving the player agency too is really, really good. Thanks, Vic.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, guys. Well, this was Ben, Daz, Drexy, and Vic for Explorminate. Thank you very much, and I'll catch you next time. Keep exploring, guys.